This is Agriculture Today.
Grain transportation activity delivered mixed signals late in January. Rail demand remaining historically strong, barge movements rebounding week to week, ocean freight rates continuing to firm. Combination points to steady export demand, but rising logistical and cost pressure for shippers. U.S. Class 1 railroads originated nearly 32,000 grain carloads during the week that ended January 17th, down 1% from the previous week, but still 31% higher than a year ago and 26% above the three-year average. Railcar availability tightened sharply. February shuttle secondary bids averaging $750 per car above tariff, $200 higher than the previous week, nearly 600 above last year. Now, the non-shuttle bids remain near tariff, underscoring stronger demand for guaranteed shuttle service. Barge traffic improved as weather disruptions eased. Grain movements totaling nearly 568,000 tons for the week that ended January 24th. It's up 27% from the previous week and still a little below last year. Downbound traffic increased, unloads at the Gulf, though, declining. U.S. milk production reaching record levels, but those volumes increasingly disconnected from the long-term health of the dairy herd, and it's raising the risk of tighter and more volatile markets ahead. New analysis from the American Farm Bureau Federation shows that current output strength reflects short-term herd management decisions rather than durable expansion. It's leaving the industry less flexible if conditions change. Milk cow inventories climbed to 9.57 million head late in the year. It's the highest level since 1993, even as replacement heifer numbers fell to 3.91 million head. That's the lowest since 1978. Now, culling has remained historically low, keeping older cows in production longer. It's inflating near-term milk supplies, and that combination boosting output but weakening the biological pipeline needed to sustain the production over time. What's the key driver? That's beef on dairy economics. Strong beef prices, premiums for beef on dairy calves have encouraged producers to shift breeding toward beef genetics, improving short-term cash flow while reducing the number of dairy-bred heifers entering the replacement pool. Now, Farm Bureau notes the strategy can add the equivalent of several dollars per hundredweight in near-term revenue, but it actually narrows the industry's ability to rebuild the herd when conditions turn. One positive sign, culling this year could add to the ground beef market, domestic ground beef market, reducing the need for exports. Well, uncertainty around U.S. beef processing capacity is raising fresh concerns about whether large-scale heifer retention is even necessary as the industry looks toward rebuilding the cow herd. Recent plant closures, production cutbacks suggest slaughter capacity may shrink before expansion efforts fully begin. Don Close is with Terrain, says Tyson Foods' decision to close its Nebraska beef plant and reduce production in Amarillo, Texas, has altered the balance between fed cattle supply and slaughter capacity. Fewer cattle needed by packers, feed yards may be able to meet demand using existing inventories. It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Now, I do not expect another 25 million metric tons to go to China in the next marketing year.
Arlen Suderman with StoneX.
With a crop that is essentially made now in Brazil, we can assume that Brazil soybeans will be cheaper than U.S. soybeans throughout calendar year 2026, and that as a result, crushers will have no interest in buying U.S. soybeans or very little interest at that. Yes, U.S. soybeans have a higher quality to them, according to many in the industry, but Chinese crushers are also value crushers, and they go for the best value, and they see that as Brazilian soybeans, and we expect that to continue. We could see weather problems cut the size of the crop in Argentina, but that tends to play out more in the product market. So if the 25 million metric tons were to be purchased, it would likely have to be primarily by the state grain buyer to go into the reserve. They simply do not have storage for that larger scale of soybeans. Now, they could offer an auction at a big discount. That would indicate a significant commitment of China trying to keep the waters calm, so to speak. But I fully expect this to be part of the renegotiation process. Maybe they do another 12 million metric tons instead of 25 million metric tons. That does help bridge the gap to getting our domestic biofuel program better established here in the United States. Could still be seen as a positive. 25 million metric tons, if we have a strong biofuel program, would be considered very positive. I simply don't see it. That doesn't mean I don't see some opportunities for a tight balance sheet. I'm just trying to be realistic here. We've talked previously about the rare earth minerals issue, how China has over the last 30 years been carrying out a strategy of gaining control of the world supply of rare earth minerals to where they control 90%, some analysts say as much as 97%. I'm going to go with 90% for now, but essentially a monopoly of the supply of processed rare earth minerals. We saw that Mark Carney, Prime Minister of Canada, traveled to China to work out a trade deal that has significantly angered President Trump. One of the reasons is, as President Trump has been trying to contain China with the various trade deals he writes with different countries, and Mark Carney with this deal has seemed to have swung the door wide open for China to have access to Canada. But one of the critical things in there, not getting much press, was the allowance of China to buy a mining company in Canada, a Canadian-owned mining company that also owns several mining companies in Africa. So China gains these controls listed as gold mining companies, but when you mine gold, you also mine other minerals, including critical rare earth minerals, allowing China to have greater control over a larger segment of the industry, both of gold and of rare earth minerals in this. Certainly a factor that probably won't be named specifically by Trump, but one of the other factors that's very upsetting to him and why President Trump has threatened another 100% tariff on Canada if, in fact, it goes through with the trade deal. And so that's a real concern considering the ag trade that we do, the energy trade that we do with Canada, specifically the amount of heavy crude oil that we bring down into refineries in the Midwest from Canada, which have previously been waived from those tariffs by President Trump trying to hold down energy costs and inflation. So that could happen again. Canada is also is our biggest buyer of ethanol from the United States. Now, whether it would retaliate with tariffs against that ethanol coming into Canada or not, we still do not know.
It's Agriculture Today.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever, because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We represent ranchers in New Mexico, and our job is to be where the rancher can't be.
Carol Ann Romo is executive director for the New Mexico Beef Council.
We are often in schools, we're in communities, we're in the city, right in town, where a rancher maybe doesn't get to speak to those folks that aren't as familiar with beef. And then we do a couple things. We promotion, education, and research are the three pillars of what we can do. But those are pretty far reaching. So whether it's talking to students about beef being a part of a healthy diet, or breaking down barriers to entry with recipes and cooking demos and things like that. And then also telling the story of ranching and making sure people know where their food comes from if they're ready to hear it.
Beef Council is funded through the checkoff.
Specifically to New Mexico, every time a bovine animal is sold in the state of New Mexico, $2 is collected. And so that's collected by our brand inspectors through the New Mexico Livestock Board, who are really grateful that they do a lot of the legwork for us, or dare I say all of the legwork for collections. And so every time an animal in New Mexico is moved district, which is maybe a county or a couple counties, they required a brand inspection. And if those animals were sold, then that brand inspector will collect $2. And then it breaks down from there. So one of those dollars is a federally required dollar, and that gets split. So 50 cents goes to the federal organization, the Cattlemen's Beef Board, and then they use contractors to do the work of the checkoff in that regard. And then 50 cents stays in New Mexico. And then on the state dollar, that state dollar, the full dollar stays in New Mexico. And so I like to say about $1.50 from every animal that's sold comes to New Mexico Beef Council. And that's how we get the work done. But anytime an animal is sold, and then again, thanks to our brand inspectors and the New Mexico Livestock Board, a lot of our collections happen, when those cattle are inspected. And, a fun fact about New Mexico is we have the strictest brand laws in the nation, and it really helps prevent theft, helps prevent, cattle rustling. I did mention the Wild West, right? And so that's been a really great thing. We really appreciate the work that our livestock board does again. And then it does make things nice for us when you're collecting that money. It happens at the same time as a brand inspection.
What are some of the programs they fund?
So we have a beef grant program that we're really proud of. It's in 52 schools throughout New Mexico. And if a teacher is willing to cook beef, whether it's often it's a consumer science or a culinary class, but we have some other classes too, and we're open to whatever class it is. And as long as they're willing to cook beef in the classroom, we will reimburse them up to $1,000. And then that reimbursement happens as it goes, right? So if the teacher is out that money personally, or even if the school is out that money, we want to make sure we get those reimbursements right away. And up to $1,000, and that's for kids cooking beef in the classroom. We're really proud of that one. And then we have some other programs that go with education with universities, and we're always open to new ideas too. So if you're, a teacher, or you are familiar with a school in your community and you have an idea, let us know. That's one thing too that I really want to let folks know, is we're open to your ideas. If you're a producer, you've got input. I'm often calling producers asking for input and putting them on the spot. But if you have an idea and I don't have to put you on the spot, you can put me on the spot. give me a call, or shoot me an email or text or anything, and try and be open to your ideas.
It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to ag chemical application, make sure your equipment delivers. For years, growers and custom commercial applicators alike have depended on Wiley sprayers and Case IH application equipment from Wiley Implement and Spray Center. Wiley offers new and used self-propelled sprayers, as well as our own line of pull-type sprayers for any size operation. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
This is Agriculture Today.
We felt like back in October when there were rumors of problems in China and they were heading into the fourth plenum meeting, the 15th fourth plenum meeting. That's the 5-year strategy meeting of the Communist Party of China. A time when leaders are sometimes removed from position at various levels, that we felt like President Xi was secure in his position, although he may have some cracks in his power base that he would be assessing.
Arlen Suderman is with StoneX, looking at trade issues and focusing on China.
But we felt like he's secure in his position because one of his lifelong, family friends was at a high position on the CMC in the military as a general. And so we felt like that assured him the support of the military, and so he would be secure in his position. I said at the time that this 4-day meeting in about the third week of October would be a measuring stick for Xi to determine or indicate what his support base was like at home. And if he felt like his support base at home was strong, that we wouldn't even see him meet with President Trump, perhaps in South Korea the following week. President Trump, meanwhile, was talking about how he was going to meet and have a trade deal and China would buy soybeans. But I also warned that if he sensed that there was cracks in the foundation of that support base, that he would be quick to want to ink a deal with the United States to calm the international waters so that he could focus on his problems at home. Now, President Trump has his problems at home as well, as he's losing the independent voter, according to surveys shown, and he can't afford to lose the independent voter ahead of the midterm elections in November. And if he loses Congress in those midterm elections, his agenda gets significantly curtailed. So both leaders had reason to come together to calm the international waters with that handshake trade deal that they reached. Now, let's bring it forward then. China was quick to want a deal, indicating there were problems, there were cracks in that foundation of support for President Xi, and he has continued with the purging. And in fact, over the weekend, he removed yet another CMC vice chair and Politburo member who was that close friend, that close family friend of his. And that's what's been most shocking of China, that nobody is now safe. Now, you can read this as, with just one general left on the CMC, that President Xi has unprecedented power now over the military. Or you can read it that his insecurities are growing and he's really worried about whether he has defectors around him, and that becomes something, you know, making it afraid to sleep at night type of an issue. My bias is that there are significant cracks in the foundation, and the more that he tries to tighten the noose, so to speak, the more those cracks are going to unfold and become harder to control. That doesn't mean that he's about to be removed from office or anything like that. It does mean that those risks are certainly there. What it does mean, and this is where it ties into soybeans, is you remember when that trade deal was announced, I said there were two things that could unravel this. We have seen China buy the 12 million metric tons of soybeans as promised. We've only started to see those shipments, so they are starting in the process now of shipping those soybeans.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Our crop budget publications include projections for the revenues and costs associated with the major row crops produced across the northern, central, and southern regions of Illinois.
University of Illinois ag economist Nick Paulson.
On the revenue side, we are currently projecting a $4.25 per bushel corn price for the 2026 crop and assuming trend yield levels across Illinois. Trend yield expectations range from a high of 241 bushels per acre on high productivity farmland in central Illinois to a low of 198 bushels per acre in southern Illinois. In addition to crop revenue, our budgets include sizable projected federal payments from the ARC and PLC commodity programs ranging from $48 to $58 per acre. Total projected revenues for corn production in 2026 range from $890 per acre in southern Illinois to $1,080 per acre in central Illinois. Production costs are separated into non-land and land cost categories. Subcategories of non-land costs include direct inputs, power costs, and overhead costs. Direct costs include major inputs such as fertilizers, pesticides, and seed, as well as the costs associated with drying and storage and crop insurance. Power costs include those associated with a farm's machinery and light vehicles. Finally, overhead costs include hired labor, building costs, insurance, interest expenses on non-real estate loans, and other miscellaneous costs. Total non-land costs for corn production in Illinois in 2026 are projected to range from $789 per acre in the northern and southern regions to more than $800 per acre in central Illinois. For the costs associated with farmland, our crop budgets include a projection for the average rental rate for cash-rented farmland in the region. Land costs for 2026 are projected to range from $182 per acre in southern Illinois to $327 per acre for high productivity land in central Illinois. Net farmer returns provide the difference between projected revenues and both non-land and land costs. Returns for corn production in 2026 are projected to be negative across all regions, ranging from negative $82 per acre in southern Illinois to negative $38 per acre in northern Illinois. We now turn to our soybean budgets for 2026, where we are currently using a $10.40 per bushel price and expected trend yields, which range from 61 bushels per acre in southern Illinois to 76 bushels per acre on high productivity land in central Illinois. Adding in the expected ARC and PLC payments results in revenue projections ranging from $682 per acre in southern Illinois to $846 per acre in central Illinois. Non-land costs on soybean acres tend to be lower than those for corn across all three subcategories. For 2026, we are projecting the lowest non-land cost for soybeans in northern Illinois at $476 per acre and the highest non-land cost for soybeans in southern Illinois at just over $500 per acre. Projected farmer returns to soybean production in 2026 are expected to be higher than those for corn. Returns are just above break-even levels at $17 per acre in northern Illinois, $6 per acre on lower productivity land in central Illinois, and $25 per acre for high productivity farmland in central Illinois. Projected soybean returns in southern Illinois are just below break even at negative $5 per acre. For a 50-50 corn soybean rotation, average net returns across all regions of Illinois are negative for 2026. For example, high productivity farmland in central Illinois is projected to generate a negative return of negative $15 per acre. These projections for 2026 continue what is now a 4-year run of poor returns to corn and soybean production. Returns averaged negative $47 per acre in 2023. Central Illinois returns are currently expected to be marginally positive for 2025 due to payments from commodity programs and the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program, which exceed $90 per acre.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I'm Wade Parker. I live in Jenkins County, Georgia, which is in extreme East Georgia, just a small town that has about 14,000 people in it. And agriculture is our biggest industry in Jenkins County.
Like many rural communities, agriculture is the major economic driver. Parker explains the importance of crop insurance.
Agriculture is the economic engine. While there may not be a lot of farmers, the farmers that we have cover a large land area and they farm a lot of acres. And peanuts and cotton are our main commodities. Then our secondary commodities are corn, soybeans, and in this case where I'm sitting right now is our family farm, which is pecans. As far as farmers, we do employ a lot of people, and also the businesses in our town of Millen, which is the county seat, very much depend on agriculture as their main economic driver. Pecan production is similar to other commodity production, but it's also vastly different. The main way it's different is we don't have to plant a crop every year, but we do have to set a crop in April. Our trees, which these ones behind me, are approximately 80 years old. And one thing about pecans is they produce, even when they get up in age like that, as long as they are cared for, they can produce on up to their 150 years old. We also have a lot of young trees that are more productive and a lot more pest resistant. Well, there are several challenges and problems to all of these agricultural commodities. But to the general public, they say, okay, your chief challenge is weather and markets. Those things we can't control. But there's several things that we can do to help mitigate weather losses, help mitigate poor market conditions. And we try to do those throughout the year, whether it's forward pricing a commodity or through crop insurance. That is our biggest tools as far as managing losses with the weather. Leading up to Hurricane Helene, we were getting ready to harvest. By 4 o'clock that next morning, I was literally holding on to my mattress because I thought I was going to be taken out of my house. The winds were so strong. So when I finally made it out of the house the day after Helene, then I came to the pecan orchard. You could not walk through here. And the whole crop that we were going to harvest in a few weeks was totally on the ground. And there was no way we could get machines in here and clean up the mess and harvest the pecans. So we lost our entire crop. This crop, it was zeroed out by crop insurance adjusters. And it was probably 2 weeks later after it was zeroed out, we got our crop insurance check. And it was just like a manna from heaven because we had no money coming in. We weren't going to have any money coming in. And that crop insurance indemnity allowed us to have some money to get the orchard cleaned up until we could get other government assistance and really pay our help. Because otherwise, we were going to be in a very, very bad financial position. If you were to walk around this orchard or drive, you will see stumps scattered about, a lot of stumps. This winter, what we'll do is we'll move over probably 3 feet from the stumps, and we'll plant a brand new tree. And hopefully, 8 years from now, when they finally start producing, 10 years maybe, that is the real downfall of these. Is to how long it takes to get a pecan tree in production. I think the perseverance is driven by not wanting to give up. Our love for producing pecans, our love for producing row crops, a lot of satisfaction, a lot of reward.
Georgia farmer Wade Parker, it's Agriculture Today.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.